Welcome to This Is Money's festive special podcast. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me and editor Simon Lambert today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. Alas, another victim of the coronavirus pandemic is our annual festive taste test, confined as we are to our own homes. But fear not, dear listener. Being the resourceful bunch that we are, we have a little surprise for you. A surprise because, quite frankly, as always with these things, who knows how it's going to turn out. But in theory, at least, we shall be serving up a festive feast of the big news stories of the year alongside a taste test quiz effort thing, so do play along at home. We'll be chewing over unsavoury items of the year, corona economy, Brexit wranglings and savings rate slashes. We'll then digest some of the sweetest stories from the year. This Is Money's victories for pensioners and the comeback of the milkman. And we wash it all down with bubbles. House prices, Bitcoin, the stock market maybe, and of course, hot tubs. So just sit back at home, because let's be honest, you're probably not allowed to go anywhere else. Grab a mince pie and some sherry and enjoy our humble offering. And don't forget, to stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news, just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first up on the list is our savoury items, or rather unsavoury in terms of news. And where on earth do we start with this year? Could you ever have believed at the start of 2020 that there would be a bigger story than Brexit? Hold my pint, says a brand new virus. I don't need to remind you what happened from that point on, as we are still living it. Instead, I want to take a brief, or let's be honest, we could be here all day, look at the state of the economy and the way the government has handled the situation and where we go from here, all in the context of Brexit. I thought I'd keep it light for the start of this show. But first, a quick taste test quiz explainer. Now, we've secretly picked a few items, savoury, sweet and some festive tipple. That's the bubbles part. Neither of us know what the other has. Now, each person throughout the course of the pod has 30 seconds to describe what they're eating without saying anything about it physically or anything obvious as to what's in it. So, stuffed with raisins and sultanas in a pudding shape is probably not going to be allowed. Only the taste, please, everybody. No hesitation, repetition or deviation. I think that's how it goes. 2 points for guessing exactly the right answer, one for being in the general ballpark, and a point if you are the taste tester and someone gets it right. Now, Lee, a very warm welcome. Kick us off with the first one, if you would. What are you putting in your mouth? And for the benefit of the listener, Lee is going to have to black out. Oh, there you go, Lee. Okay, Lee, so what have you got for us?
Can I just say, if this podcast doesn't win some sort of national award in some sort of festive roundup, I'll be very surprised. Right, here we go. You ready? I'm going to try and get the sound. It's got a nice crunch. Oh, it's got a nice meaty flavour, nice and crunchy. Oh, nice smokiness coming through now. Really, really good with a pint of beer.
All right. Simon, what do you think Lee is eating?
I was going to say some form of oddball festive crisps, because I know what a big fan of oddball festive crisps Mr. Boyce is. Because one year, not only did he buy his oddball festive crisps, he made some for us and brought them into the old studio so that we could try and guess what on earth that he had made. But then he said it was good with a pint of beer, and I'm thinking that he's eating maybe a pork scratching.
Ooh, all right, pork scratching.
Okay, I don't know why that's festive, though. Okay, apart from the fact that at Christmas you can eat what you want.
And all that you want is, I think, the rules. Turkey and stuffing, Christmas crisps. Lee, that's a no. Okay, Lee, what have you been eating?
I have been eating pigs in blanket flavoured peanuts from Asda.
Oh, we didn't even get any of that right, did we? Okay, that's
pigs in blanket flavoured peanuts.
For any of us.
That's a lot of food groups in there.
But they are delicious. They've got that crunchy coating around the peanut. Do you know what I mean? I've had a couple of bags already over the festive period, and I might have to go back to Asda to get some more.
No. All right. Well, thank you very much, Lee. We've gone off to a real winning start there, which actually is probably quite apt, given what we're about to talk about right now. Simon, we will come to your taste in a second, but I think the Queen jumped the gun in, what was it, 1992? Surely 2020 has been the annus horribilis of all annuses horribilises.
The good news, if you'd like some good news, we had some figures out this week from the ONS. The economy grew between July and September by 16%. That's higher than it was believed to have grown. So that's an upgrade on growth. And that is a spectacular growth rate. Unfortunately, in the second quarter of the year, the one that preceded that, it shrunk 18.8%, and it hasn't grown anywhere near enough to make up for the losses that it made. And year to date, well, not year to date, year to September, it's down 8.6% in total. Now, the Bank of England in November said that it expected the economy to shrink again in the final quarter of the year, basically, but that it didn't expect us to have a double dip recession. And it thought that the economy would return to growth in the first 3 months of next year. Now, a recession requires two consecutive quarters of negative growth. The issue is that was entirely predicated on lockdown finishing at the end of November, start of December, and then things being not normal, but like the newer version of normal, not everything shut down. And that doesn't look like it's going to be the case. It looked pretty hopeful for it throughout most of December, actually. And I think that's what's been such a crushing blow about everything that has happened in the past week, is that a week ago, it was my birthday. And on my birthday, I was pretty optimistic about Christmas. I've got this reputation for being a bit grumpy and a bit anti-Christmas and a bit grinchy. I actually really, really, really like Christmas. I love Christmas. I love having my family over. I love doing the family stuff and everything like that. I just don't like decorations going up before the 1st of December or Christmas stories on my website. However, I must admit, even I am struggling to put my normal cheerful face on stuff a week later on the 23rd of December. Christmas is well and truly cancelled. I am one of the millions of people living in Tier 4. Only a week ago, I was in tier two. So yeah, it's a bit of a crushing blow. And the problem is, for a lot of people, is it just doesn't look like it's going to get any better in 2021. And I think a lot of people have decided to put 2020 behind them, have a laugh and a joke about how it was the worst year ever. And it's like, okay, at least things are going to get better in the new year. The Bank of England appeared to have decided that that was a good tactic as well in that November report. And it doesn't look like it's going to be. It looks like the whole of the country pretty much is going to be entering January in tier four. And I mean, we can call it tier four all we want, but it's just another word for lockdown. People are very worried, perhaps rightly so. My personal hope is that actually it doesn't turn out to be as bad as they think, that they've jumped the gun, but by jumping the gun, they do a good thing. The infections stop rising, they start vaccinating. Is that going to mean that the economy doesn't shrink in the next quarter though? I'm not so sure. I think, you know, January, February are probably going to look quite bad economically. So we're probably going to end up with that double dip. If the economy has shrunk 8.6% in September, by the end of the year, it's probably going to have shrunk by more than that. What have we been doing about it? Well, the Bank of England has been splashing the cash like nobody's business so that the government can splash the cash like nobody's business. We have had £875 billion worth of QE to date. There was an extra £150 billion of it included within that figure announced in November, which means that astonishingly, of all of that £875 billion of government bond purchases through quantitative easing, more than half, at £440 billion, has been added since the start of the coronavirus crisis in March. And I would fully expect us to get a bit more of it again in the new year. The base rate has absolutely tanked. It has been slashed all the way down to 0.1%. Bear in mind, we started the year thinking that it might rise this year. And we've got the threat of negative rates. Economically, things look pretty bad if you look at all those numbers. In all reality, though, I think that things possibly look better than they could be expected to. I think that consumer spending, consumer confidence, has been much more robust than you would have expected under the circumstances. And I think that once we get through to the point where we feel confident that we can let people out again without shutting them up 20 minutes later, then things are going to come back pretty strong and the economy is going to do pretty well. We have this talk of the roaring 20s, which is basically just convenient newspaper stuff because they can hang it on the 1920s and a pandemic and stuff like that. But that doesn't mean that there's nothing in there. Look at how people wanted to go on holiday. You couldn't get yourself a holiday let in the UK for love nor money. The moment you could go to any country, people were booking flights. Look at the stuff that people have been buying. They reckon Christmas spending is going to have been pretty good this year. All kinds of things like that. And that is set against an absolutely woeful economic backdrop. Loads of people on furlough, lots of people losing their jobs, people being told to stay at home, economy shrinking.
A very comprehensive sum up there. And I'm glad you mentioned the 20s, because I was reading an article today about how we're going to be having sex parties in 2024, apparently. I mean, who knows about that, eh?
It's like, don't worry, only 4 years to wait.
Sounds marvellously exciting. Lee, Simon's given an overview there of the economy, touched on things like rates. One of the big stories that we've been talking about this year is the absolute slashing to savings rates that we've seen. But that and other ways that perhaps people's personal finances are going to be impacted.
Yeah, so you could say that savings rates have been cut to the turkey bone, but I mean, I'm trying to put as many Christmas links as I can into this. Nice. And I'll stop, Georgie. Yeah, it's been another dire year for what return you get on your savings. Year after year of this podcast, I feel like it just gets bleaker and bleaker. And obviously that has been exacerbated this year by the pandemic. We've seen base rate go down to 0.1%. Already big banks weren't really involved in the chase for savers. They kind of given up because a lot of people have just been holding their money in current accounts and not even really bothering to offer any kind of return. All they really offer now is protection up to £85,000 of your money. And then we've had things like NS&I who made cuts to rates that were planned to come in May, and then they postponed them. And we all said, oh, well done, NS&I, done the right thing. That's good. Then it upped its funding target so it could have tens of billions of pounds pour in. Those tens of billions of pounds poured in, and then they made even deeper cuts than they were going to do in May, which I think was just an incredible thing to do. I mean, wow. In the way that all transpired, leaving people with the prospect of a 0.01% savings rate. But look, Ennis and I have to go with what else is happening in the savings market, and big banks and building societies are just as much to blame for these low rates. But, you know, on the flip side of that, we've got record low mortgage rates still, and personal loan rates and all that kind of thing. So it's a fine balance between all of that. But nonetheless, it's been difficult out there for savers and rates. But in terms of people's personal finances, I think there's been a real divide between the people that are being put on furlough or have unfortunately lost their jobs, and the people that have managed to keep their jobs, perhaps seen their commuting costs drop. Maybe they've seen other kind of discretionary spending drop where they're not going into work and eating fancy lunches. Those people, there was some data out recently suggesting that on average have saved £7,000 this year. For a lot of people, they might have got into the savings habit for the first time despite the low rates, and actually just having that pot of cash to do something with in 2021. Simon touched on holidays there. A lot of people would quite frequently spend a couple of £1,000 a year on holidays, spend a couple of £1,000 a year on the commute. All of that added up has left a nice chunk of cash for some people, but it's a real case of have and have nots. And we even paid off some of the massive credit card bill. There's some signs there. There's some green shoots of life. I still think that people are using some of that savings perhaps for as good a Christmas as they can have. 2021, we got a card through the post saying, good riddance 2020. Here's to a healthy and prosperous 2021. The calendar's not going to tick over to 2021 and all of a sudden we're going to have a fantastic year and this virus is going to disappear and it's all going to be good. Lockdown's looking likely till March by the sounds of reports, or at least some sort of form of it. You know, I think we have to be targeting April onwards as to life going back to something more ordinary. But who knows?
Indeed, who knows? But we are going to move on. Simon, it's time for your savoury taste test. Blank your screen.
Okay, I have blanked my screen. I nearly muted myself as well, which would have been a mistake. I have got my savoury item. I'm going to taste it now. Good crunch there, if you can hear it. Right. I shall describe it. Slightly salty, sort of substantial crunch. It's the kind of food, like the property market, is a British national obsession and seems to have become even more of an obsession in recent years. It's considered classic Christmas food. I think really you could probably eat this all year round, and I would certainly be perfectly happy to. But as I would, but as with anything, I think go for quality. Go for quality and you'll get the best.
I'm absolutely baffled.
I'm looking for clues. I want to see some crumbs around Simon's mouth because I've got absolutely no idea.
But
knowing Simon as well as I do, I'm actually going to say that he's eating pork scratchings and I think some sort of like maple syrup flavour or something.
I'm going to say... Do pigs in blanket make a crunchy sound?
Not unless you burn them or put them in the oven too long, which Simon does have form on.
I'm going to go for them anyway. A crunchy pigs in blanket effort.
If I had some maple smoked pork scratchings, I might have gone for those, Lee. I don't have any. And I don't know whether they're considered Christmas food. That was why I questioned my guess for you. It was, in fact, a pig in blanket.
Was it?
Yeah, and if you cook pigs in blankets in the oven, the bacon can go a bit crunchy. I mean, maybe I left them in the oven too long.
All right.
I was busy recording a podcast.
That's it, I've peaked. We can end the podcast now. No, we can't, because I do want to... Just very briefly, before we can move on from the unsavoury section, just a brief one on Brexit, won't you?
Look, trade deals always go down to the wire. We talked about this last time round. We're at the wire now. We're over the wire, I think. The wire was meant to have been a few days back. Will we get a deal? Won't we get a deal? We don't know. I think maybe we'll get it sorted pre-Christmas. I think maybe they're going to drag this one out right up until the 31st, perhaps. I highly recommend that if you are one of those people who is allowed to see your family or friends over Christmas on that one day, that you avoid coronavirus and Brexit as Christmas dinner topics. Yeah.
Good luck with that. All right, then. We've got one final thing to do, and that is me to do a bit of a taste test. I'm not looking forward to this, I'll be totally honest with you. This took about 9 hours. So bear with me on this one. Okay. Okay. It's a bit slimy and sort of quite vinegary. Not, I think, how it's supposed to taste, because I spent hours making it last night in a slow cooker and I'm about to throw it all away because it's rancid. I never said I could cook people. So it's a bit slimy, a bit boozy, a bit gritty as well, but I don't think it's supposed to be.
What? A bit slimy, a bit boozy, a bit vinegary, and a bit gritty.
Yeah.
Are you describing slime?
It leaves a very long aftertaste. It is a very common thing to have at the Christmas dinner.
I think it's red cabbage.
Boozy. I mean, I think maybe it could be red cabbage as well.
Oh my God.
A bit boozy, a bit slimy, a bit gritty. Are you drinking from a puddle? I'm going to go red cabbage as well.
You'd be absolutely right. I spent hours making this bloody red cabbage with a full red cabbage and it's rancid. So there it is. Yeah, Lee's happy with that one. There's a massive slow cooker full of stuff that's about to go in the bin, unless anybody else likes red cabbage that tastes a bit boozy and gritty. I followed the BBC Good Food recipe, right? And that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
What booze did you put in it, Georgie, out of interest?
Cider. What grit did you put in it?
Cider.
I don't know where the grits come from. I'll be honest with you, Simon. I don't know. So well done, everybody. So at the end of round one, it is 2 points to Lee, 3 points to Simon, and 3 points to me as we go into the sweet round, something a little bit nicer. Because in amongst the gloom and doom, I can still taste that awful stuff. There has been many rays of light, in fact. And we've picked just two of those. And before we get to a victory, for This Is Money readers, Lee, what are you going to eat for us?
Can you hear the packaging? It's crumbled all over my keyboard. It'll be really nice dunked in a cup of tea. It's got a real sort of raisiny taste, but it's not a mince pie.
That was my guess. Damn it.
And I'll tell you what, I could eat a whole pack of those. You get about 20, 25 in a pack. Yeah, they're good.
25 in a pack, so it's not a mince pie. It's crumbly. Fig roll?
That's not a bad guess, Simon.
Editing. I've just read the packet. There's 17 in there.
17 in a pack. That doesn't make it any easier. Lee could eat a whole lot. He doesn't like mince pies, so it can't be too mince pie-y. I reckon it's going to be biscuits.
This is scintillating. This is scintillating podcasting right here. I think it's biscuits. Well, I'll tell you what, Georgie, it is
gingerbread biscuit.
Okay, it's Christmas pudding chocolate digestives.
Oh,
and
wow.
They are immense.
Big rolls. Do they count as biscuits or cakes?
No, we're going down a rabbit hole.
All right, sorry. Okay, right. Leave it at that one. Leave it at that one. Okay, thank you very much, Lee. As everyone rushes out and buys Christmas pudding, biscuits, chocolate digestives, no less. But Simon, not such a good news at the start, this story we're going to cover now, but it was a This Is Money investigation into pensions. It really shows the power of what you guys can do for your readers. Just briefly explain to us the role that you had, Tanya and Steve Webb.
Okay, so earlier this year, we uncovered there had been a problem with people's state pensions, women's state pensions. They had built up, you know, years of national insurance, but they weren't being credited for them. This might have been, you know, if they stopped working, for example. Tens of thousands of elderly women basically shortchanged on their pensions, could be owed £100 million, we think, in a scandal that was uncovered by Steve Webb, our pensions agony uncle, and Tanya Jeffries, This Is Money. Is a major problem for people. They have been underpaid pensions for a long time. The DWP have been looking into this. We're not convinced that they have been looking into this as well as they can. We have already uncovered two cases of widows who received £115,000 and £117,000 in payouts because their pensions were not increased when their husbands died decades ago. So they've been underpaid for decades. So the reason why this is a sweet story rather than a savoury or unsavoury story is that there is a problem. There has been a problem for years, but we have uncovered the problem and now something is being done about it. Steve has been campaigning heavily on this. Tanya has been carrying the torch for it as well. We've put lots of cases to the DWP. We've helped out lots of readers. And it, you know, in these two cases, £115,000 payout and £117,000 payout, that is a very, very substantial sum of money and can make a life-changing difference to people. But we've had lots of people who've had tens of thousands of pounds paid out, you know. And the problem is that basically married women who retired on small state pensions before April 2016 should have got an uplift to 60% of their husband's payments once he reached retirement age two. Since 2008, the increases are supposed to be automatic. But before that, women had to apply to get the full sum they were due. And they've just not been getting what they were owed. So, you know, we've got another case where a lady got £14,000 back payment. She was widowed earlier this year. She's now on the correct rate of state pension. So she's got the right state pension going forward. She's got more money coming in going forward. And she's got £14,000 back payment. And before she was widowed, she was only on a state pension of about £45 per week. After she contacted the DWP, it turned out she'd been underpaid since her husband turned 65 in 2011. Now, Steve and Tanya are urging people with elderly female relatives to ask them about their state pension if they see them over the festive period. There's quite a lot of people who might even end up Zooming their elderly parents to ask them about it and look into it, because you never know. And we've had people who we've talked about this with before, and it's turned out that they are owed money too. So, you know, if you can get someone a back payment and a better state pension, that's pretty sweet.
Sweet. Very good. Very good, Simon. All right. Thank you very much. Now it's time for my sweet offering. I'm looking forward to this because I can still taste the cabbage in my mouth. But I am now going to taste my sweet offering. It's not crumbling anywhere. Nicely chewy. Little bit of a crisp outer. Some festive spices in there. A bit stuck in my teeth. I know, this is pleasant. Sweet, but a little bit, teeny bit of sort of salty savouriness to it. Very popular when I was growing up, where I was growing up as well. You probably get about 20 to 25 in a bag.
I'm going for those little fish, you know, that you get in Scandinavia, those little sort of like sweets.
Something chocolatey. Lindt. Lindt chocolates.
No. Lebkuchen.
Ah.
I would say they're like grown-up gingerbread. They've got like a nice little, nice like plummy centre, haven't they? They are nice. I'm going to go get another bag after I finish.
Right, Lee, you've done your consumer trends column, talking about good news and sweet. Hasn't always been good news, but it's been lovely to read. And among many of your good news stories, and indeed many good news stories doing the round at the moment, have been support for local businesses, I think, during this time, and the creation of new businesses. But in there was also the return of an old style of business. That was the humble milkman. And I think this deserves a sweet story, no?
I think you're right, Georgie. So I started my consumer trends column back in January, and it was a bit of a different backdrop back then. And I had a whole list of places that I wanted to go and people I wanted to see and all these things being done. And one of the first things that was on the list was to go on a round with a milkman. It was actually a milk woman. And I went up to Colchester, went and saw her, and I went on the tail end of her round, and they basically work overnight. So I didn't fancy, 12 till 8 a.m., if I'm being honest. And I went up there, and it was fascinating watching deliver all this milk. And she was telling me about how there'd been a surge in people signing up. And lo and behold, when the pandemic hit and lockdown hit, we relied on the milk and more service quite a bit, to be honest. We get milk delivered on Monday, we get it on Friday. Get bread, eggs, cheese, those staple things. Now, I would say it's a little bit more expensive than it would be at the supermarket. We get a pint of whole organic milk and a pint of organic semi-skimmed. But my argument is, A, it's been delivered and there's no minimum delivery. And B, it stops me going to the supermarket when I go, oh, we've run out of milk. And then going into the supermarket and ending up buying a load of other stuff. And it's been a fantastic service. And actually, between January and September, they told me recently they've had 85,000 more sign-ups, Milk and More. There was 300% increase in searches on its website in the height of lockdown. There's more people sort of turned to the milkman to make essential deliveries. And they don't just deliver milk, Georgie. There's not just Milk and More out there. There's more, there's local companies that do it as well. But I would say, since I did that column in February, I've noticed a big uptick in friends and family and friends of friends who seem to be getting their milk delivered. I think probably because of the pandemic. And it's nice. It's nice to wake up with a load of goodies out on the mat, ready to pick up. My daughter loves it. She knows that Monday is Milkman Day. She knows Friday is Milkman Day. She learned to walk actually at the start of lockdown. So in March, now she's opening the door, marching out in her shoes, come rain or shine, to go and get that milk indoors. And it's been brilliant.
You've trained her well, Lee. Well done. Well, I'll ask you about future consumer trends for next year a little bit later on. But Simon, it's time for your sweet round.
Okay, right. So you've got to bear in mind that the Lambert household is a primarily savoury house. So I've kind of bent the rules here. There's basically nothing sweet for me to test in the house that works. So I've got something that it has a sweetness to it, let me say. It's a drink. But I'm not going to say it's got a sweetness to it, as in it's like super, super sweet. So just be warned, okay? So I am tasting it now. Right.
Are you going to do like a comedic slurp? Or,
It's got a softness to it. Mm-hmm. Slightly velvety. There's not really that much taste of sweet in it at all, actually. It's got a slight bit of acidity at the end that combines with a little bit of sweetness.
Right, I think that's it, that's all we're allowed, Lee. I'm gonna go Simon, for a cup of tea.
I had it tossed up between eggnog, Bailey's, sherry or port, but I've seen recently that sales of sherry are up massively in the last couple of weeks. I'm gonna say sherry.
Okay, I'm gonna say it's not sherry and it's not a cup of tea either. This is something that you would have not after your Christmas dinner, but with your Christmas dinner. I'm going to tell you it's a glass of wine. It's a Merlot.
So I would suggest that none of us got that right. I thought tea was a rather good guess. You know, I would have liked that one. But anyway, not to worry. At the end of round two, it is Lee 3, Simon 3, Georgie 4. Right. Now it's time for the festive tipple, although to be fair, we've all of us, apart from Lee, I think, already cracked open our festive tipple. You can have bubbles if you want, but I thought it might get a bit obvious if everyone has bubbles, but by all means, it sort of fits with our theme, and we've had many sort of bubbly things this year, housing prices, Bitcoin, perhaps even the stock market. But first, before we get to that, I'm going to offer you my festive tipple. So, as I reach for my festive tipple, is a smooth, slightly bile-flavoured tipple there, which leaves a little bit of a kick as it coats your mouth. It's sweetness. Do we need more? I don't know how to describe them.
These visuals, the visuals of these descriptions, honestly, are just second to none. Georgia, you are sitting there, I reckon, with a nice ice cold glass of Bailey's.
Okay, Simon?
Eggnog.
I can tell you, Lee is 100% right. 2 points to Lee.
Christmas Bailey's.
It is a Bailey's, which is not in an ice cold glass, sadly, but still, it's a lot nicer than the cabbage. Simon, we are going to talk about bubbles, though. I didn't produce any bubbles there. That sounds dodgy, doesn't it? I didn't taste any bubbles there, I should say. Mine was very, very smooth. But what has not been smooth is, and we'll go firstly to the housing market.
The housing market? Wile E. Coyote going off a cliff? The Terminator that just won't die? Forever blowing bubbles? The property market started the year with an absolute swing in its step. We had the Boris bounce, if anybody can remember the Boris bounce. The Boris bounce was a bit short-lived. But then there was lots of stories at the start of the year focusing on house price figures from December, saying about how they were evidence of the Boris bounce. The housing market had actually picked up before the election, and house price figures from December did not show a Boris bounce because the election was in the middle of December and basically nobody agreed to buy any properties and then managed to buy them in the second half of December. It's really hard to do that. The Boris bounce really arrived in the new year when the housing market opened with a bang, spring in its step, lots of people put their property on the market, we're going to get moving this year, and things were genuinely really picking up. There was a bit of confidence. And then, as we know, the year got worse rapidly in February time, and then by March the Boris bounce had been well and truly whacked on the head. The property market was put into the deep freeze. Basically, maybe a few sales went through, but only those that had already been agreed. You couldn't view properties. Estate agents couldn't go around to value them. Surveyors couldn't go around to do their valuations, which is a hugely important part for the housing market. Everything ground to a halt. Everybody expected that when things reopened, stuff was going to absolutely tank because we'd already seen a wave of job losses. We'd seen millions of people furloughed. The economy had been shut down. We pushed the big red pause button. This was it. This was going to be the thing that finally knocked the UK housing market on the head. When the market reopened, there was a bit of renegotiating on deals that had already been done because, as I said, most people expected prices to fall. People who had agreed a property purchase back in, you know, January or February time and had then put it on pause were saying, well, I just can't risk buying it now, and then all of a sudden I've got a property that's worth 10% less. And then something weird happened. Estate agents started to report that actually there was quite a lot of interest. They were doing these socially distanced viewings and they couldn't get everybody in who wanted to go see the properties, especially bigger, more substantial, detached properties, popular areas, anywhere a bit rural, outskirts of towns. There was talk of this exodus out of London. It was building up ahead of steam. Initially, it was a bit like they're just talking up the market. But the data started to show that actually there might be something in this, and these estate agents might actually be telling the truth for once. And the property market had somehow managed to emerge from the deep freeze with a bit of a bounce. We thought there might just be pent-up demand because it was shut down over the prime property buying period of spring, you know, sort of Easter time and everything. Then Rishi Sunak announced his stamp duty holiday to get things moving. There was some talk that Rishi Sunak actually had intended to have a stamp duty holiday round about budget time in November, but somehow it leaked. Problem was, once it had leaked, nobody was going to buy a house. Well, not nobody, but lots of people would hold off buying a house because they thought it would get just cheaper from a tax perspective. Cut stamp duty up to £500,000, maximum saving of £15,000. And that just stoked the market up even further. And over summer, we had a mini boom in the property market, continued through into autumn as people rushed to try and get deals done so that they could get it sorted before the deadline. I think that moment has passed now, and I think, you know, I think we can call the end of the mini boom. We talked about this a few weeks back, and I think, you know, I was calling the end of the mini boom. Who knows? But all you can say about the property market in the UK is that it is absolutely astonishing. I mean, the figures that we're getting through, house prices up 7% year on year, you know, basically the average house price since the stamp duty holiday was announced is up by more than the maximum saving from the stamp duty holiday. And in order to buy the get the maximum saving from the stamp duty holiday, you need to buy a house that's worth twice as much as the average house anyway. So for some, it will be a false economy. For others, it won't. What we have definitely seen is that there has been a mini boom. And as I've fed through to the wider real economy as well. So that it's not, you know, Rishi's stamp duty holiday is not all bad. It has meant that people have, you know, electricians, plumbers, kitchen fitters, builders are absolutely rushed off their feet at the moment. Who knows if that will continue. And the shops that sell stuff to Travis Perkins, Howdens, Dunelm, DFS, all these businesses have done very, very well off the back of it and off the back of pandemic spending on people sprucing up their houses. Who knows what's going to happen in 2021?
Good, I'm not going to ask you then. Lee, what I'm going to do is ask you about another little bubbly thing, and that is Bitcoin.
Well, Georgie, yeah, it's been a fun time for Bitcoin investors, speculators in recent months, because we've seen Bitcoin go above $20,000 a coin for the first time. The cryptocurrency is now at $23,000 a coin. By the time you listen to this, it could be somewhere completely different. Who knows? When Bitcoin had its rise at the end of 2017 and the start of 2018, it shot up so quickly and people got burnt. They got their fingers burnt. A lot of people piled in. This time around, it's completely different, I would argue. It's still one of those kind of areas that I think people still get quite confused of, and I'm not going to go and spend time talking about blockchain and all that kind of stuff. But what I will say is this time around, instead of it being lots of individual investors, perhaps lots of people that got burnt before to start interested this time around, it's on the back of demand of sort of institutional investors and endorsements by banks and payment providers, aka Bitcoin's getting a bit more kind of more established people are looking at it and going, this is a thing. But just to highlight cryptocurrencies and how you know, volatile they can be and how crazy the market can be, Elon Musk tweeted this week about Dogecoin, and that went up 35% just on the back of his tweet. So if you were holding some of that in your portfolio, well, that was a nice nice surge. But Bitcoin at the start of 2019, Georgie, was as low as sort of $2,500, $3,000 a coin. And I say as low, but that was as low, it was down in the doldrums after going up to almost $20,000 the first time around. So you would have lost quite a large chunk of your money if you were invested in, you were just hodling, waiting for the price to recover. But if you were patient, the price has now gone up, and it's gone up sort of $10,000 a coin in the last few months. What happens in 2021? I've got no idea. Please don't ask me. We have got a guide coming written by George Nixon. He's looking into what the future holds for cryptocurrencies next year and the rest of the decade.
All right, Lee, I won't ask you then about the future. We'll just have to wait to see what George writes about it. But Simon, just a brief one on the stock market. Could that be a little bit bubbly?
I think so, yeah. I mean, not necessarily the UK stock market. That's still down a fair amount if you measure it by the FTSE 100 or the FTSE All Share year to date. There's some companies that have done well and have risen on where they were before. There are some that are still suffering. There are some that have seen a big, big post-crash bounce, but are still below where they were when we started the year. And just to put that in context, the UK stock market, a lot of people take the peak from kind of like of the market falls that we've seen from kind of the endish of February point, a peak at the endish of February point to about March 23rd. That's when most global markets hit a low. Actually, for the UK, it hit a high in mid-January, in fact. It then sort of climbed back up, but never quite hit that high again in February, and then absolutely got hammered. We saw such big down moves. Swift, heavy, fast, painful, went into lockdown. Everybody's like peak pessimism. The stock market started going up. And then it kept going up. I mean, it had some falls. But it was the US that was leading the way. The US stock market went absolutely bananas. It took a big fall. We expected this to be like the housing market. This would be the thing that really sunk those big US tech shares, which we thought were overvalued and in a bubble anyway. And they just rocketed. Who knows what it was. Maybe they proved to be much more resilient than people thought. Some of them have some pretty good business models with some pretty steady cash flow coming in. Some of them are a bit pie in the sky. Some of them would have to do some unbelievably spectacular things to justify the valuation being put on them. Tesla, for example. But it went bananas, and we had what was called the FOMO rally, the fear of missing out rally, as basically people chased these stocks higher. We saw the rise of the lockdown share trader. This was definitely a thing in the US, definitely a thing in the UK. A whole new generation of people got interested in trading shares. They were sat at home. They weren't working. Maybe they were furloughed. Maybe in the US, they'd got some of the stimulus checks that were mailed out, chucking it into these apps where you can trade on your phone, and they were trading. They're not investing. They're not necessarily buying Tesla shares to be still holding them in 5 years' time. They're buying them because they can see they're going up. They're effectively momentum trading, trying to make a quick buck. And because they've been in such a substantially rising market for a period of time in that, lots of people have done very well. The question is, again, obviously, what happens now? Everybody's holding on for this US stimulus bill. The US is so important because it makes up 60% of the global stock market. It's not just got, you know, the world's biggest names in there, but it also makes up 60% of the world's stock market. There is talk that actually the UK could be a good place to invest for 2021 because it's one of the places where you can still find value and you can play the recovery at a decent, a more decent price. Whether you can play the recovery buying big US name shares is arguably going to be very difficult. It probably doesn't feel like that at the moment looking at the UK, but you know, these things will pass and all that, and maybe it will finally be the UK's time to shine. The question is, considering how much the US stock market has gone up, is, are we back in bubble territory? Are we riding for a fall? Or are we back in bubble territory and ultimately riding for a fall, but will we see the final melt up before then? The melt up is when just everything goes bananas, everybody's buying, everybody's trying to make money, and everything goes up, and then it finally takes a tumble.
To put the champagne on ice, or something linked to festive tipples. Simon, it is your turn now, please. What tipple do you have for us?
Okay, I've made a mistake here, haven't I? I've done my festive tipple in the preceding round, so I'm going to have to switch back to something that isn't a tipple.
Okay, I think you're messing it up now, Simon.
Yeah, in the spirit of 2020 and wild U-turns and inexplicable policy decisions, and in the spirit of this is money taste tests of the past, which, let's face it, are not a taste test. They're just like some weird audio chaos. I'm now going to taste something savoury again.
All right, fine.
Okay,
now. Do that, Simon. Is it bubbly though?
This has a festive feel to it. Mm-hmm. If you can hear, I'm opening a tub. It's a big tub that I'm opening. Okay. I'm looking at this. It's got a festive shape to it.
The tub or the food stuff?
The food stuff, festive shape. Tastes crunchy. Tastes like something that you might eat through the whole of the rest of the year, but would usually come in a little packet. Biscuity, tangy, savoury, a little bit of a festive treat. You could probably end up eating way too many of these, more than you would want to. They are quite Moorish.
All right then. Lee.
I think Simon's eating cheeselets. You know, those little cheesy biscuits.
All right. I think festive looking twiglets. Although now you say the cheeselets, they do come in little Christmas shaped sizes, don't they? But, you know, I'm going to go for something else. Twiglets.
Okay. You're both right in a way. Georgie's answer is wrong, but she nearly got the right answer. Lee's answer is correct, but they're not cheeselets. They are...
Oh, look at that. So I did say the right size. They are trees... Oh, I'm
treeslets.
Sorry.
Yes,
treeslets. Sorry, Lee's getting that.
You've not had a treeslet before.
I'll get one for a sort of close guess. And Simon, you get one for us guessing. So well done. But Lee, that's pretty good. They are in the shape of a tree. Marvellous. All right, then. That was not even remotely close to anything festive tipples. But that's all right. As you said, Simon, we're keeping in theme with the year. And talking of the year, Lee, the bubbliest of all bubbly things, hot tubs
are going to define my 2020 in this podcast and reading stories. I could honestly never ever look at a hot tub in the same way ever again. So in the height of lockdown, lots of people used their holiday cash that they couldn't use because it was cancelled to then go out and buy hot tubs, and the hot tub market became red hot. and it saw all sorts of scams happening where people were buying, trying to get their hands on hot tubs for whatever reason. And that's all I want to say about that, Georgie. I think that says it all. Are you going to be using your hot tub again next year after buying one this year? That's the true question. How much does it cost to run a year? How much does it cost to maintain? Have you really thought about this? A hot tub is just for summer. In the voice of Mel Smith as Father Christmas, not another blooming hot tub.
All right, then. We'll leave hot tubs to one side. But Lee, it is time for your festive tickle.
I have a drink. First of all, I would like to say it's not alcoholic, because even though it is now after midday, I want to pace myself this Christmas, Georgie. Mm-hmm. I was tempted with a White Russian, because that is my drink, my go-to, okay, especially with my milk and more deliveries, to use up the rest of the milk that's in the fridge. And I like it with a little pinch of cinnamon at this time of year. Nice. Non-alcoholic drink. It's hot and it's not necessarily festive, but it launched this year. And it's, I'm just going to tell you the flavour now. Let me just take a slap.
Mm, do. Oh, that's lovely, Lee. It sounds like you just... Mm.
Now, that is a lovely, lovely, lovely bit of drink there. Mm. It's got a bit of a sweet tang to it. It's a usual drink, but not as you know it.
Okay. I'm going to go for a Bailey's Kenko sachet. Only because I think I've got one downstairs. Simon?
I'm confused. Give me another brief description.
Hot drink. A usual drink that you'd have all year round. It's not necessarily Christmassy, but it launched this year and it's got a sweet little tang to it.
Not necessarily Christmassy, but it launched this year. That's what confused me. A sweet little tang to it. Because I wanted to say a hot chocolate. But a hot chocolate didn't launch this year. Some kind of fancy hot chocolate. Branded hot chocolate.
All right, I'll put you all out of your misery. This is a little nod to Georgie. So earlier in the year...
Oh my God, it's a Yorkshire tea. If it's a Yorkshire tea... Oh my goodness me, how did I not get that?
It's too late now. The Yorkshire tea is visual. So earlier this year, my wife became obsessed with multi-biscuit Yorkshire tea. Now, it's not that. What they also launched this year...
Mince pie Yorkshire tea.
Toast and jam. I thought it was a joke. I saw the things on the internet and I thought it was a joke.
They are really nice. I highly recommend both. It sounds disgusting. It sounds weird. It says on the box it tastes like jam on toast. It is really nice. And I recommend you buy this Yorkshire tea. It's endorsed by Lee Boyce.
And Rishi Sunak as well.
He's not as important.
Wasn't there a Yorkshire tea backlash because he was pictured with a big bag of tea bags? Yeah, and it was the social media thing.
Yeah.
Don't drag it all down. This is a fun podcast.
Sorry. Yeah, no.
That likes his Yorkshire tea. He might like biscuit tea. He might like jam on toast tea. I tell you what, I'll email the Treasury and I'll find out and let you know the next podcast.
Yeah. The fact it's Yorkshire tea just owes an air of legitimacy, I think, to that concoction there. All right, to sum up round three, just to keep you updated, in third place at Simon with 4 points. I am next with 6, and Lee is storming ahead with 7. So into our final round we go, because like every good meal where you've stuffed your face, you simply cannot squeeze in anything more except an after eight, perhaps. Or some cheese. How do you find the space? Don't know, but we were going to. So we're going to crystal ball gaze into 2021 a little bit further. But Simon, your after dinner treat, or indeed, I don't know, beans on toast, or whatever you've decided you're going to offer us in this special section.
Right. Okay. Good luck editing this podcast. That's all I can say, Georgie Frost.
Thanks.
Right. I'm turning my camera off and not muting myself this time around. Okay. As I said earlier, there's not a lot of sweet stuff in the Lambert house. We are basically a household that tells people that if they want pudding, they need to bring it with them, which I don't really have anything after dinner treat like in the house, but I do have what you would have after Christmas dinner if you're not into sweet stuff and Christmas pies and things like that. And I'm going to taste it now. The item is fairly hard, got a nice tanginess to it, and I've mixed it with something that goes very, very well with it, which gives a little kick to what you're eating and a hint of spice and an extra bit of tanginess that combines nicely. This would go well with the wine that I was drinking earlier.
Marvellous. I'm going to go for... How tangy is tangy, Simon?
How soon is now?
Right, fair enough. Okay, I'm going to go for a mature cheddar and some red onion chutney.
I'll go cheese, crackers and chutney.
No crackers. It was mature cheddar. It was not quite chutney. It was Bloody Mary salsa.
Oh, goodness me.
Yeah, I can recommend it. Bloody Mary salsa. Search it out. I also like a bit of fresh chili with my cheese as well.
Nice.
Nice little slice of fresh chili and cheese and crackers.
Very briefly then, because we could be here until 2021, but we're not going to be. We just want a little bit of a look into 2021. And Lee, I suppose as the king of consumer trends, just pick out something for us that you think we should watch out for.
I think, and actually I did something about this around about April, May time. I think the future of holidays, I think there's going to be a real shift in habit. We obviously don't know where the land lies for summer next year, but I think going ahead in the next 5 years, the way that people book holidays is going to change massively. I think it's going to be a lot of last minute bookings as people are hesitant to potentially lose money if things get cancelled. I think where we go might change quite dramatically. I think a lot of people will look to holiday more in Britain, perhaps, than going abroad. I feel for people in the holiday industry. I really do. And things like cruises, for example, what happens to the future of cruises? How do they get back on their feet? How people holiday in the next 3 to 5 years is going to be an area that I'm going to really keep an eye on, because I'm fascinated by it. As someone who loves their holidays, I'm fascinated by it.
All right then. Lee, what are you about to eat for your after-dinner treat?
I've got it here. And I'm biting into it. Lovely and crumbly. It's got a sweet lid. It's got a nice fruitiness to it. Oh, that is good. That's really saucy. That's naughty. I don't think I'm going to turn the camera back on. It's that nice. Oh, every mouthful it gets better.
How many mouthfuls do you think it can have, Billy?
I think I could do it in four, but I think a normal sort of person that's not a complete and utter horrible cretin would eat it in about eight.
Okay. It's quite large.
And the top has it almost looks like snow, the top. Like a nice dusting of snow.
Christmas cake.
Okay, so Christmas cake for Simon. I reckon it's going to be. I can't be mince pie because you hate mince pies. I'm going to say a Bakewell tart. For some reason, that's all I can think of. A Christmas Bakewell tart. Is that a mince pie?
He is eating a mince pie.
You've got to be joking. So,
here we go. Listeners of Podcast Pass obviously know that Simon and I don't like mince pies. But let me tell you a quick story. In November, I had a salted caramel Aldi mince pie, which my mother-in-law said this is the ultimate gateway mince pie because it doesn't really taste like a mince pie. From there, I've gone on to harder and harder stuff, Georgie. I've had the M&S ones. I've had the Waitrose Heston ones. I've been trying them all.
I have
found the Holy Grail. The Holy Grail. It's from a company called Cook.
Good.
Now, I love Cook, and Cook this year have been a real sort of saving grace for us. They do frozen meals. I've stopped buying takeaways because the curries are so good. And big shout out to Cook. I think they're fantastic. And these mince pies are handmade, and they are handmade in Sussex according to a 30-year family recipe. And they are very, very, very nice. If you can get your hands on a pack of these mince pies, I highly recommend them.
I'm blown away, Lee. I'm blown away. I can't believe you're not just eating mince pies. The grief I've got over the years for giving you mince pies. I can't believe it. All right, then, Simon, just a quick one. What's in store for the economy in 2021? Pick something out for us that you think is going to be well worth a watch.
I think that we are going to discover that this mutant strain of virus thing isn't as bad as we think now in the bleak midwinter. I think that we're going to get people vaccinated quicker than we think. I think things are going to be looking up sooner than we think. And I think we're going to get a bit of a recovery going on. And I think that the thing to watch is for British consumer facing companies. I think people want to buy British, they want to shop local, they want to do these kind of things. So whether they're stock market listed or they're smaller, I think those companies that are exposed to the British consumer, which have really been battered about over the last 4 years, they're up, they're down, you know, they're worried about this, they're worried about that. I think that they're going to do pretty well. I think we've already seen some of the signs coming through, and I think that they are going to continue to do well. And I think that that's going to be a real bright spot. And if that happens, it will feed through to better employment numbers, better sentiment, better feel-good spirit. And in a year's time, we will hopefully be sitting here reflecting on what a good year it's been and how it certainly didn't feel like that on the 23rd of December, 2020.
Except for that hour that you were listening to this podcast, which was the bright spark of the
year. Yes. Or if you are dismayed at our taste test, you will have decided that that is unfortunately an hour of your life you're never going to get back.
That's okay, though, because that's probably like most of this year. So, you know, either way, every glad.
What's an extra hour, guys?
Exactly.
Oh, I tell you what I'm hoping for as well is basically I really want to see this Christmas star. I want to see this alignment of Jupiter, the planets, Jupiter and Saturn, isn't it?
Mm-hmm,
correct. Yeah. And it's been the most 2020 thing ever. The best time to see this star at nighttime in the night sky just before Christmas. And it's been thick cloud through the whole week. It's like even the heavens can't be bothered. Well, I tell you what, I think apparently weather's going to improve, sky's going to clear.
Yeah.
Christmas Eve, get out there, look for that star, that unless little ray of hope.
To. Yeah. Stay at home, people.
No, you're allowed to go outside and look at the stars.
I wouldn't.
That I believe might be tier 17 that's coming in at some point in late January, where you're not allowed to go outside and look at the stars.
Yeah, exactly. I saw the images from Spain, which leads me nicely onto my after dinner treat. I'm eating it now.
Eating it now?
Yeah.
Damn, I thought it was sherry.
No. It's hard but smooth. It's not crumbly. There's a sort of nuttiness to it. It's not an overpowering flavour. Me gusta mucho. Just to give you a little bit of a clue. It takes a while to go down, I have to say. Oof. But I rather like it, I have to say, and it is, there's no sweetness coming through. It's a very savoury flavour, but not an overpowering one.
Chorizo.
I'm going to go for some fancy jambon off one of those sort of like, you know, things that you slice it with a knife.
Jamón.
Jamón Ibérico.
Yes.
No, we ate that. I bought one just to accelerate the move up north for some reason. No, it is not that. It is some queso. It is manchego.
Oh, I love manchego.
Okay, so that's it. That is it for our festive taste test. Let me tot up the scores, which haven't changed much from the last one because we didn't do that well this round. In third place, I'm afraid, the wooden spoon goes to Simon with 5 points. And in the joint lead is Lee and I on 7 points. As I'm still tasting the red cabbage and probably will do until 2021, that makes Lee the victor because I imagine if he can't make red cabbage, he doesn't have delusions of grandeur that he thinks he does. So well done to Lee. I make you the winner. Congratulations. We're all winners. And let's hope 2021 will be winning for everyone. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team or anything you'd like them to look into, Simon?
You can email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. You can tweet us at thisismoney. And you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to join in the debate and read the comments and point out any improvements that we can make in the taste test for 2021, such as just even getting things in the right round and the right order, which someone might have failed to do and was therefore a deserving loser.
Lee, a word to the victor?
I'd just like to thank the opportunity to be part of this festive food tasting session. I'd like to thank my friends and my family. And most importantly, I'd like to thank you both for what has been a fantastic year of podcasting, of being on This Is Money, and long may it continue.
Hear, hear, and thank you very much to the listeners, and thank you, Lee, actually, for the digestive biscuits, choice and spilling ones. I'm going to go and buy some of those. If you like our podcast, please do rate us on iTunes. It helps people find us. Merry Christmas, everyone, and Happy New Year.